This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician. Giddy hit Austin. My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Together we move. Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, coming to you from beautiful Fort Worth, Texas, in the heart of Trinidad World Recording Studios, my studio here in Fort Worth. The only show that takes a close look, a behind-the-scenes look at making music today, all kinds of art, film, books. I mean, we're just stretching the boundaries of what this show goes after, speaks about. Man, we are that lighthouse in the fog, as we like to say, as you navigate through chaotic musical seas. Go into stores where there are no CDs. Go online where there's billions of bands begging you to join them in their quest for world domination. You think, where do we turn for some perspective, some focus about where we've been and where we might be going? Friends, you have found it. Welcome to the P2 Podcast. Thanks for joining us here again this week. We have a special guest today, a musician, an actor, filmmaker, referenced to myself by the great Pete Coatney, the P2 Podcast's own Pete Coatney. He is Chance Ryan Brentham, and he joins us here today. How you doing, man?
Good. How are you, man?
How's that breakfast over at the Dixie House sitting with you right now?
Really good. Really good. I enjoy that place. It's nice.
Listeners know well the Dixie House. They have endured many a Kurt South sort of belch, just kind of, you know, as we sit and, you know, podcasting in the afternoon, and he apologizes. There's a chicken fried steak I ate across the street a little earlier, coming back to haunt me. Well, Chance is a great drummer. He is an actor, been in plays. He's, man, traveled the world doing his photography, film. We're going to talk at length about a very interesting project he's working on, about the great avant-garde artist, musician, Clint Rippey. We're going to talk about that a lot in our second segment. But here in this first segment, I was going to ask you a little bit more about, man, how you got into this whole thing. Music, art, you always been into it? Come from a musical family? Or?
Well, I was definitely influenced by an older brother who's an actor. And he's also a songwriter, writes his own stuff. But early on, I just was really influenced by art through him. My mom sings and plays guitar.
Yeah.
My dad's a singer.
Did you grow up playing drums first or guitar? What was kind of your first instruments?
I did. When I was about 2 years old, my brother, my eldest brother, Shane, I used his sticks. He was in marching band and all that. And I got his sticks and, you know, would just bang around on stuff, dance around playing stuff. And I guess I was about 4 when I got my first drum set. And
right.
By the time I was 5, I knew it's what I wanted to do the rest of my life. So
that's right, man.
One of the things I wanted to do.
So in high school, did you start bands? Did you play in the actual band, or were you kind of doing your own playing cover band stuff, or would, you know?
Right. We preferred to call it drumline.
Right.
We were a lot cooler than the band.
The band. The drumline was the cool guys.
The cool guys.
That's right.
And I did jazz band through high school, and concert band, every kind of band you could be in. Show choir.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was
So, man, you've gotten into, you know, you've been traveling around playing music recently. What do you do? What do you do for a living, you know? I mean, how do you – you do all kinds of things. Wear a lot of different hats.
I do. The last 2 years I've started juggling tons of different responsibilities, I guess you could say.
Right.
Photography, doing commercial work as a director, doing, of course, music and acting are still my full-time career.
Right.
So I work at a Casa Mignana, fixing a open a show.
Starting on a Peter Pan, is
Peter
that right?
Peter Pan, I'm a pirate.
Well, me and the kids are gonna be there seeing that, man, for sure.
Yeah,
we're big fans of the children's theater over there at Casa Manana. Is there a lot of acting stuff? There's always Metroplex has got all kinds of theaters and
yeah, there is
troops and things.
There's a lot of good, very very good theaters in Dallas Fort Worth area. You just have to go out and find it. There's Water Tower Theater, Arlington, which is a great theater, community theater.
Yeah. Did you ever hear the Pocket Sandwich Theater still there?
Yeah.
Is that still there?
They're still around.
Is it still on Greenville, or did it move?
It is. Last I saw it, it was there.
I had a friend of mine who was in a couple shows down there, not far from the old Poor David's Pub.
Right, right.
It was down there. We threw popcorn at the stage, and that was a good time.
Yeah.
I've been there a long time. I don't know if it's still there. I haven't checked in with it in a long time.
About a year ago I saw it, and it was still there. So.
Yeah, well, good deal. Let's hope it is. Let's hope it hadn't burned down like everything else on Greenville recently. God bless them all. Oh, gosh. How'd you get to know our good friend Pete Coatney?
Oh, man.
The man who brought you here to the Trinidad World Recording for the podcast.
Believe it or not, I was playing Jesus at his church.
I can believe it.
And, I was playing Jesus, and people just started hooking me up with him.
Yeah.
And gave me his number. And when I started doing this film, which we're going to talk about later, he knew Clint, and I... just started talking to him. He started introducing
a man where rock and roll and worship service go hand in hand. And there he is.
Pete and Jesus.
That's Pete and Jesus. We got his Slingerland kit here. It just says Brother Pete with the folded hands on the front head, of the kick drum. Always gets a good response.
Oh, yeah.
And the old Blue Sparkle kit with the cross on it. Everyone's like, man, that must be Pete Coatney's kid over there. I'm like, man, absolutely. Everyone who's been to an Ingram gig knows those two drum sets over there. We're honored to have it here at Trinidad. Hey, come record here at Trinidad, by the way. 817-733-5256. Or book Phil Pritchett and the Full Band. Email me, phil@philpritchett.com. Chance Ryan Brentham, singer, musician, drummer, filmmaker. Well, I got to know Chance here very recently. He came out to the Glass Cactus the other night where the Full Band was playing up in Lake Grapevine, the Gaylord Texan. Pete sent me a trailer, a movie trailer, for a project that Chance has been involved with on the great Clint Rippey, musician, a very mysterious, very misunderstood guy that... he's kind of one of those guys, like a good book. Like, you talk to the right people, they know who he is. It's not something you bring up in casual conversation, but if it comes up, if you hear somebody mention him across the room, you kind of pull that guy aside later and go, hey, how do you know Clint Rippey? You know, how'd you become originally aware of Clint?
Well, I spent the last, 13 years as a full-time musician, touring with different national bands, and you always... There's always those mythical characters that you hear about, and you never know where they are or what they're doing, or even if they really even exist. Is this just a music myth? Because surely nobody would do, what the stories tell you.
That's right.
and you kind of hope that they do, but at the same time, you're hoping that that doesn't exist because it's just too out there.
It's hard to get your head around.
It really is. And I was on the road with an American Idol artist. We were playing, and in every one of our breaks, we would we'd start talking about.
Was this a few years ago? Or
this is about 3 years ago.
Right, right.
3-4 years ago, something like that. And
which artist? Do you remember who it was?
Selena Ray.
Okay.
She was
was she in the final?
She was in the final
20 or something?
No, she was in, I think, the top 8 female.
Oh, okay.
Carrie Underwood year.
Me and the kids watch American Idol.
Yeah.
I don't know if that year maybe I watched that much, but
yeah, she's
so you got hooked up kind of as her touring band and
I was playing drums for her and singing background vocals. And a lot of the musicians would sit around and would just start talking about crazy musicians that we had heard about or whatever. And I'd always heard since I was in high school about this crazy drummer. Our director used to talk to us about Clinn.
Yeah.
And you heard this name Clinn, you know.
That's C-L-I-N-N?
N-N, right.
Yeah,
and you always
Clinn.
And okay. Of course, you always say Clint. And
yeah.
No, Clinn. And
Clinn.
He, did this and he did that. And I heard about it in high school. And I knew that we weren't too far in age. I think he's 35, 36.
Mid-30s, probably.
Yeah. And actually, he's about to turn 36.
Does he live here? Is he based out of North Texas?
He lives in the...
I never really knew where he was from. You
right.
Know?
I'm not actually at liberty to disclose where exactly he lives, but it is in the Metroplex. And,
right.
Which I was shocked because there's so many genius artists here and you...
Well, how did the name come up? I mean, was it somebody knew him or had played with him?
Well, they started talking about the story of his latest album, Symbolic.
And right.
Which I had heard rumors that, you know, that he was
now
doing
that's
it.
Symbolic with a
C.
With a C, like symbol.
Right,
okay,
Symbolic.
Right.
And, there's a lot of symbolism there.
That's right. a lot of meaning to be.
I need
confused.
A drum set. Badoons.
That's right.
He started talking about this album, and he had heard it. And now the crazy thing about Clinn, which one of the first things you learn about him is that he only when he records something, he only records one album. And
so he's only made one.
Well,
the myth is that he made
the one.
He's made one copy of the album.
One copy of the album.
Like,
right.
They said, man, he's only made one record. And
right.
I said, I need to pick that up. And somebody said, no, you don't understand. He only made one
exactly.
copy. Like, there's one actual, was it a vinyl disc?
It was
or
vinyl.
Was it?
He does everything on vinyl
okay.
because of the warmth.
So he's made one, there's just one copy of Symbolic.
Right.
Does anyone know where that is? Some guys backstage were claiming they had a copy of it. They're like, man, I've already got a CD. And this other guy was like, dude, there's not a CD. That's a burned generation away from it.
The problem is that people replicate it.
Yeah.
And a lot of companies have replicated it as a vinyl, and so everybody's claiming to have the original, and
right.
nobody really knows.
Where the original copy is.
Who has it.
God, that's bizarre, man.
It's very, very bizarre. And his other albums, he's done the same thing with. So,
yeah.
You know, it'll turn up on tape, or it'll turn up on a burnt CD, or on the black market somewhere.
Well, we're going to talk about this is because I had heard some of these stories from same kind of deal when I got into music young, professional, making records and things, and these session guys would come in, and the name Clinn or Clinn Rippey kind of would come up, and guys would start. You know, smiling and just telling all sorts of, it's like talking about, like Bigfoot or something
sure.
or some sort of, I'm like, wait a minute, are y'all making this up? Like, no, he's a real guy. And some of the things he brought to certain recordings and how far his reach is and how many people in New York, LA, London, Ireland, worldwide who are tuned into that sort of, people know a lot about drums and, true avant-garde experimental music, I guess, do know who Clinn Rippey is.
Sure.
Fascinating story. Chance has undertaken a project here, a documentary film about Clinn Rippey. Who is Clinn Rippey? You can see the trailer online. But we'll tell you all about that in our next segment. We're going to take a real close look at the documentary being made and by Chance on Clinn Rippey in the next segment when we come back.
But we had road ahead and miles behind. Nothing's ever easy when you're on the move. A little too deep and on and a lot to prove. I almost lost you when I
fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, talking with our good friend, Chance Ryan Brentham. Filmmaker, musician, drummer, artist, actor, you name it, he does it, man. I am enthralled with the project this guy's got going on. Everyone comes up to me all the time, what are you working on, Phil? You got some new songs? You got gigs going on? Oh, man, for so long I get so bored sometimes. Just going, man, we're just playing Houston next week. We're going back to the this or this or this. Of course, we love playing shows. It's what we do, after all, making records for all the different kinds of people. Well, our old friend Pete Coatney puts me in touch with Chance, and it turns out we have a common link in the great artist Clint Rippey, mysterious, mythical musician. He's actually making a documentary film and interviewing some people who had encounters with him and putting it into a great format. You can go see the if you go to YouTube and search Clint Rippey, CLINNRIPPY, the trailer will come up. It's a long-haired guy in a bathing suit. If memory serves the picture, that's the right one. Click on that. Gives you a short little taste of kind of what you're in for there. It looks great. There's some great shots of Clint playing in there and some interviews and things. And I can't wait for it. And we've even talked about, who knows, your own Phil Pritchett perhaps being making a small appearance in it. Who knows? Anyway, that all remains to be seen where the Clint Rippey project heads. When did you start working on the Clint Rippey project?
I started about 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. I had, of course, heard about Clint, and I was actually in New York, and was in a record store. Past 10 years, I've been really getting into vinyl, and I came across a rare recording. Well, it was a replica of the original Symbolic,
but it was on a vinyl disc.
It was on a vinyl disc, and you could tell where somebody had taken the original artwork and glued it onto the top. And so I knew
was it expensive, or was it just like in a dollar bin or something?
Well,
half price books.
The thing about Clint is a lot. Sometimes people don't know about him.
Yeah,
you know, they know about his performance art. Some people know about his performance art and don't know him as a musician and see him as more of like a John Cage or, you know, performance artist.
Sure.
But
now, what do you mean by performance artist? I mean, because I've only kind of known his drumming.
Drumming,
you know?
Right.
When you say performance artist, what does that entail?
I think that he was labeled as a performance artist because he started doing these really random displays of his art, displays of his music. Of course, recording drums underwater, which when we were very, very honored to be able to be a part of that.
You filmed some of that, right?
We did.
There's some in the trailer.
Right. And I'll get to Clint as a person here in a minute, but that's how I found out about or really had a desire to do this film is
Who is this guy?
Who is this guy? Right.
Everyone seemed to know about him, but not know a lot.
Right.
About him.
And everybody remembers when Symbolic came out. And it was a lot like, you know, Miles Davis' Avant-Garde album.
Sure.
Everybody, you had three responses.
What the hell is this?
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Or I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And honestly, I was
I don't
on the,
think I get it.
I was on the not sure. I went through every one of those when I listened to that album. Because you're like, it's just noise. But then you mature as an artist and you realize, you know what? This cat has gone
just
further than anyone else. He's on a different level.
Now, describe for our listeners out there who don't. I've only heard little snippets of the actual album Symbolic.
Right.
But what's someone gonna hear on there? To the most cynical ear, what's he listening to there?
Symbolic was I guess Clint's idea that symbols are too important to not do an entire album with just symbols. So it's basically two and a half.
Like every track, because the tracks I heard was just, you know, like him
exactly.
doing a solo on symbols.
Well,
but the whole record's like that.
The whole record. And there's no tracks. In other words, it's just one track, and it's, I think it comes out to be like an hour 30, something like that.
Is it two discs? Two vinyl discs?
It's two vinyl.
It would have to be, yeah.
Yeah, it would have to. Yeah, and it's two records.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sides.
It's two MP3s.
Four sides of vinyl cymbal
four
playing.
Sides. And it. The thing about it, though, is it's continuous. So
yeah.
There's no tracks. Mm-hmm. And he does everything you can think of with cymbals. The pictures alone are just ridiculous because it's a room of cymbals.
Yeah.
And he was at a point where he was really trusting people to come and photograph, you know, take photography of it.
Yeah, yeah.
The engineer.
He was always shrouded. He didn't want anybody really to know
right
what he, but, you know.
The thing about Clint is once you warm up to him, he's He's yeah. cool with you.
Right.
And the engineer was very fortunate to have some of this archival stuff and to really explain to Clint that, you know, people want to see this, not
right.
to, not to necessarily attack him or to try to figure him out,
sure.
but to show what he's doing because
right.
it is
right.
genius. So that when I got that album, I looked on the back and I was like, you know, nobody's ever done a film about this guy. Nobody's ever written a book about this
guy. Or anyone
guy.
Like him. There really isn't
right.
anyone.
There's no one that even compares.
As a pure artist. As a pure artist.
Exactly. You know. And so I looked on the back and I saw where it was recorded. Mm-hmm. And in the process of just calling around and saying, you know, I'm a full-time musician. I'm a filmmaker. I've been fascinated with this guy all my life.
And you're just on your own, kind of
right.
alone with a camera, guerrilla style, no budget, you're just going out there searching
exactly.
for the with people you know.
Honestly, most people think I went out to make this huge documentary, but it was more for my own understanding.
Right.
And I like to archive stuff. And so I took my camera along and I interviewed, you know, the engineer. And through the process of interviewing him, I was astonished because of the stories that he was bringing up,
and the engineer on Symbolic,
yeah. And he,
which is who,
his
who is who?
Just because of his name's Josh, and uh-huh. he has a studio in Dallas.
Yeah.
I don't know if I should say it's
okay. Well,
legal wise,
yeah.
I haven't checked with my lawyers yet, but he's got to
call the lawyers.
Exactly.
Call the lawyers.
He just had a wealth of information about him, and he sent me to. Someone else that had some more.
Right.
And the thing about Clint's past is it's hazy.
Right.
You know, you hear the stories that he was raised by Indians. You hear stories that he was raised by, you know, wolves. I don't know.
Yeah,
I
mean, it's crazy.
And so through that process of interviewing him, I realized, you know, this is a man of just a wealth of talent, a wealth of genius.
Vision, yeah.
And
now, he doesn't – people should maybe know he doesn't – speak or doesn't speak a lot.
Nobody's ever.
I mean,
yeah, and that's one of the things you hear about Clint is he comes in, he does a session, and he leaves.
That's right.
Which, you know, you hear stories about the other guys that come in and they talk the whole session or they're calling mm-hmm. their girlfriends or, you know, but Clint doesn't. Nobody really hears him talk. He does what he does when he does it, and that's about it. Now, through the process of doing this film, I've realized that, you know, Clint is a human being. He's
sure.
a person. I'm finding a lot of stuff about Clint that society's never got.
Right.
Society's put him down because of this or tried to figure him out. You know, it was symbolic of something else, or was it a metaphor for this? And it's like
people don't like to be confronted with something they can't neatly put into some sort of context.
Right.
You know, I mean, I run a studio here. Every guy wants to be – you know, who, you know, Robert Earl Keane or Pat Green or say, hey, man, I want to be this. I want to be on this radio station and this and this and this. And there's so many paths to go down. Hey, here's the radio guy for that. And here's the kind of
right.
producer you need for this and this. And it seems like, yeah, as Symbolic at least gained some footing in the underground, it is an odd thing today to have something that's that, you know, it's so many bands like, man, you can't fit us in any category, you know.
Right.
And it just sounds like, you know,
sure.
Steve Earle or something. Like, yes, you can, you know, but something like Symbolic and an artist like Clint, who is a true artist in every sense of the word. I mean, who literally
sure.
doesn't even talk, literally speaks through his music, you could say.
Well, one of
is difficult for a lot of people to get their head around people have a lot of weird responses to it.
Oh, sure. Well, and it's because he's so eccentric. There's
yeah.
You know, the stories you hear all
the time. Of
course,
doesn't do interviews.
He doesn't do interviews.
You know.
And which people look at him as a jerk, but it really comes down to the fact that he's shy. He's to himself. He doesn't really like, you know, a lot of attention.
Right.
And one of the things, the stories that come up over and over again is the fact mm-hmm. that he will get up in the middle of a concert and walk out when he's
yeah.
done. Or he'll show up when he wants to.
Yeah.
And if you're a true diehard fan, even right. if you're an artist that, because he's played with a ton, I mean,
yeah.
we could sit here and name an hour
oh,
the famous artists that he's played with. And, but if you were even talk to them, they accept that because that's who he is.
Well,
and they see his genius in that,
yeah.
you know.
Well, he played on some people will know, some early demos that I was somewhat associated with. When I first got going, a project I was doing in Austin for a guy, and, I was just sort of a fly on the wall, even though I was kind of an associate producer or something. You know, my this piano player friend of mine said, "Man, we've got this." And they had all these hot shots coming. They had Stephen Bruton on guitar.
Nice.
The late great Stephen Bruton, and they also had Spencer Starnes, the old he was the real producer and owner of the studio from Asleep at the Wheel, was playing bass. And they said, "Well, we were going to have the guy from Joe Ely's band was supposed to play drums, and didn't." And they said, "Man, he can't make it." And Spencer Starnes said, "Well, we're gonna see if we can get Clint to come in." And that was the first time I'd heard his name. I said, "Who's that?" He said, "Man," he said, "he's Clint Rippey. You know, he's a session guy." And it was just like you mentioned. It was I kind of got briefed very quickly before he came in. He said, "Man, don't really talk to him. He's very shy. He'll just come in when he's ready. He'll lay the track down, and he won't listen. He'll just kind of get up and leave when it's done." And I was kind of like, I was young, and I was like, "Well, that sounds really weird, you know." And that's what it was. And we're all sitting there talking, kind of going over stuff. Door opens, and this dude with just hair and beard, and you know, smoking the cigar. My friend was like, "Hey, man, I thought you couldn't smoke in this studio, you know." But no one said anything to Clint. He just kind of walks in, sits at the drums. And man, he didn't say like, "Where's the chart?" Or what do musicians say when they come to a session? You know,
right,
like,
right.
What key is this in? Where do we start? You know, no one wants to make a mistake.
Can I hear the scratch track?
Yeah, no one. You know, everyone's so afraid of making a mistake.
Right.
And we had this charted out. It was this complex piano thing, and everybody's trying to learn. And there was no click track. Nothing. Just man, he just starts. The bass and the piano guy were just sort of vamping through here, and Clint just starts playing. You know, and just starts doing the wildest. God, just jazz fusion-y. I mean, I was just enthralled. I was on the other side of the glass, and that was my really only brush with the guy. And then since then, and then he kind of throws the sticks down, and he walks out. I thought he was going outside for a smoke break. I was like, "Well, man, when's the drummer coming back?" They go, no, he's gone, man.
I go,
"That's it? He's going to play one song?" They go, that's it. I go, "We got 12 songs we got to do." And they said, "Man, I want you to get somebody else. We're lucky we got him for one song." I'm like, "You got to be kidding me, man." I thought,
right.
Should I run after him and tell him that? No, just let him go. And that was it, one song. But it was incredible.
That's awesome.
But that was my one brush with him. And I've since tried to find his number or something to get him on some stuff here at Trinidad World Recording. Hadn't had much luck with it. Although right. I've ran into so many guys with similar experiences, you know.
Well, that's the thing is he gains – you have to gain his trust. And
yeah.
When we started filming, we actually met with the psychiatrist who had diagnosed him actually with Asperger's.
Okay. And now, what is that exactly? Kind of a form of autism or kind of?
It's basically people who are not good in social situations. Who focus on the thing that they do, and they do it really well.
Yeah.
But of course, society doesn't know a lot about
right.
Clint in that sense. So they just see a weird cat that, you know, does. I mean, he
marches to the beat of his own
exactly.
I mean, drummer, so to speak.
He wears little kids' clothes because they're his clothes from when he was a little kid.
Oh, I thought that was kind of a fashion thing.
Everybody thinks it's a fashion, and it's funny because since
it is kind of hip now.
It is hip because
the little tiny right. jackets and tight T-shirts.
And you're starting to see that a lot lately.
I never knew that. I saw
that's Clint
because he came in at that session and he had the most ill-fitting tight clothes on, and I was like, well, maybe this guy, you know, you see this guy. This is an Austin after Oscar. Maybe this is just a new wave of just you know the ultra hip thing. But this was a few years ago.
Yeah.
And then I did see in the shots in the trailer that you guys got, he was wearing like a really small sure. jacket, and it's like, man, that's weird.
Thing is that it's not weird. It's genius because it still fits, and that's the way
that's
he looks
right,
at
it. Does. Yeah,
it hasn't outgrown it. That's one of the things I want to do in this film is really protect him and protect his identity. The psychiatrist that we talked to that, you know, diagnosed
had
Clint,
been working with him.
Had been working with him. That was one of the things he said is that, you know, Clint has been protected all of his life from society.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And he's at a point now at his age where he's not that old, but he's way old. He's beyond his years and knowledge and experience. But he's finally at this place where he's out on his own, and he's being exposed to this pressure of society, and you know, we did not want to intrude on
right.
his life. We wanted to respect him from
right.
a distance, and so a lot of the early shots we got was us from a distance.
Right.
And he slowly started warming up to us and bringing us, you know, giving us little
hints. Into his world.
Right,
you know.
Right.
Now, there's a lot of scenes with him at a lake, you know, on a sailboat.
He lives on a sailboat.
Oh, does he really?
Yeah, but you don't know where that is. That's his true passion.
I mean, you know where it is, but that's not like general knowledge of where that might be.
No. I mean, people, of course, in the marina know who he is.
Right, right, right.
You know, who looks like that. But, right. You know, I even have to be careful saying stuff like that, like who looks like that, because that statement is even judgmental.
Right.
Like,
right.
That is different. Or and I think that's the problem with society and media, is that they label things as different, and we either look down at it or we try to become it. And Clint is one of those that both of those things happen.
Right.
You look down at it and you try to become it, you know? And so I really want to protect him in this film, and I think we should. He deserves to be protected, but at the same time, he's learning to cope with society. He's learning to deal with society.
A little bit, yeah.
And so I think by him entrusting us to do this film on him...
you owe it to him to just protect his identity, you know, not just unleash him to walk him down the red carpet, so to speak, when at the premiere.
And if he's ready for that, he's ready for that. And if he's not, he's not. And the same reason or the same way that his mentality is, I do what I do when I do it.
Yeah,
he sees an idea. I'm going to do an album with Symbolic. The interesting thing about Symbolic, it wasn't like this huge pre-production, how we're going to record it, how we're going to do this. Josh has an agreement with Clint where they trust each other. And Clint will either call, or he doesn't even have a cell phone. He'll go down the payphone. He'll make a call. And he has a little thing that he says. And when... I mean, it's really random. Where I'm not
kind
gonna
of
give
a
it
code,
away.
Kind of a code, speak or something.
And it means I'm coming in the studio.
Bizarre.
And so Josh will literally
he'll just drop anything.
He'll cancel a session. His clients know that.
Clan
calls.
Everybody has to clear out or whatever.
Right. Yeah. And you know, Clan called and said, "A room of symbols."
Right.
That's all he said.
Room of symbols.
And so Josh frantically got, you know, it takes Clint, I think, an hour to get to the studio.
But did he already have the clout? Where did he get the clout to pull that off? Like, you know, Symbolic was this opus. I mean, had it just been by virtue of his session work and just kind of the way
he was? Well, I mean...
The people started to really understand
his
talent.
Clint was a prodigy.
I mean,
it's not a lot of people...
So Josh was already working.
Knew. Josh is known, and you know he's the one that sent out the album, which
the one album,
yeah.
Where is it? We'll find it.
Josh, he just really respects the Clint, and so Clint is a prodigy. I mean, his story goes all the way back to when he was a little boy, and his performance art as a little boy, the rock story about how his mother caught him in the backyard putting together rocks, and he created this. Yeah, that's what I meant by the performance art.
I see.
And the musician. Well, everybody knows him as a session guy.
Well, let's get into more. Of course, we always do the third section. It's always kind of a vault section, but we're gonna keep talking about in the vault. We'll just do more on the movie, more on Symbolic, more Clint Rippey talk, who this guy is, and the forthcoming film on him, so the world can have a more understanding of his genius. In our third section, more with Chance Ryan Brentham speaking on Clint Rippey, the great Clint Rippey, when we come back.
Thank you.
Some stuff right there from Clint Rippey. The early years, yes. Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Phil Pritchard here on the P2 Podcast. Welcome to the family, everybody. Pull up a chair to the warmth of the P2 Podcast. So glad you could be with us here. Today we are talking about a legendary artist, Clint Rippey, and the man Chance Ryan Brentham, who is making a documentary, a musical documentary on the life of this great artist that I had a brush with in Austin and have heard so many stories about, as they are. There are so many great stories of eccentric fellows in the music world. None bigger, more mysterious, or more admired, misunderstood than Clint Rippey. Chance Ryan Brentham is here. Thanks for joining us again today, man.
Thanks for having me.
For eating over at the Dixie House, talking more about Clint and the forthcoming film. Playing drums underwater, making an entire record of just cymbals. You know, I even heard a rumor that there was a drummer that subbed some gigs for us a few years ago. Ryan Chris, down there, really good drummer, said that he had friends in New York, like had done some session work in New York or something, and said that, you know, years ago, even the Saturday Night Live, he said certainly in any sort of the plays and the culture, and he swore, the story he had always heard, he said, you know, the famous Will Ferrell cowbell skit, he goes, dude, that's totally a Clint Rippey ripoff. All those guys, you know, were in bands or knew people and, you know, about some guy coming to the studio and, you know, playing the light fixtures or something. I was like, oh, come on. He goes, dude, totally. He said, he claimed that, he said, I know somebody who knows Will. And he said they caught on to this thing. And he said that was kind of somewhere where that was based on. I don't know if that's any truth, but it would seem like it might be. I go, well, I guess if they knew who Clint Rippey was, it would make sense. Well, with the cowbell, just you're getting a feel for the studio space and all that. I go, well, you know, who knows?
You don't count anything off with him.
I mean,
it's anything's possible. And it's the
I hope it's true. I hope it's true.
The funny thing is, the further I go into this film and the closer I get to him, I realize that these far-fetched things that I thought were there's no way possible.
Yeah,
it was possible.
Yeah, the
and
one
it
album. Yeah, right.
But he. Some of the funny things that he would do that he's done when we film is. Is he hears things. Hears things.
Did he have the rabbit with him a lot of times? There's some shots with him.
That's his own personal. Yeah, he's got a rabbit.
It is a rabbit.
It is a rabbit.
Is it on
a
leash? It looks like it's on a leash.
He's got a leash train, which for a rabbit, basically, it walks you. I mean, whenever he hops, you know. It's not like he heels or anything. But
does it live on the sailboat with him?
He does, yeah.
Oh, God. You couldn't make that up, man.
No, he's
Now, I heard. Now, Cotney told me that he had been. Pete is the drummer. The man about the world playing the drums said that there was some interest in that he would be showing up with Jack or sitting in with the Jack Anger Band possibly
this Friday. Yeah,
is it Green Hall?
It's Green Hall this Friday. And
how do they know that? Okay, I guess there's just sort of a small window of opportunity. He might show up. He might not.
He just happens to be in Green this weekend. Uh-huh. He goes camping a lot.
Right.
Now the interesting about Clint. Is he doesn't have a car.
Yeah.
And so he
has a sailboat, but he doesn't have a car.
He has his bike that he rides, and he doesn't have a license or anything. So when he does a gig in Dallas...
Yeah. He rides his bike?
Rides his bike.
So, yeah, because he's usually always...
Which is like a 30-minute car ride. So
despite being a drummer, who typically and notoriously have a lot of gear, the times I have... In my brush with him, of course, he's just coming in and playing a studio kit.
Sure,
is
sure.
that how he rolls? He's always just playing somebody else's stuff.
That or he actually has a trailer that he hooks up to his bike and he literally drags his stuff.
Hauls his own gear on it. Oh, come on. Really?
I am not making that up. Because that was one of my interests was how does he get his stuff to his gig? And
how do you know it's not just some big put on? He's not just going to start laughing and going, ah, I got you, you know, I just, you know, whatever.
You kind of expect it to.
You do.
Because it's so far fetched.
Yeah.
But he pulls it off.
I mean, he does.
One of the things I saw him do one time is we were actually doing a shoot over Christmas. He most recently. Actually got a girlfriend. He has a girlfriend now. Uh-huh. And she's a yoga teacher that understands and respects him and who he is. But one of the most beautiful things that I saw, because even the way he responds to her, you can tell he's learning to associate with people better.
I wouldn't expect him to be his girlfriend to be like, you know, a tough industry attorney.
No,
the yoga teacher seems like it would fit nicely with what Clint's vibe is.
She sees past his look. She sees all that and sees his heart. Which deep down inside, Clint is a very loving person.
Mm-hmm.
But when we were doing the shoot, they had both agreed for us to be there, and we were just from afar observing. And they were actually they were putting up Christmas decorations.
Uh-huh.
And Clint was reaching to give her an ornament. He was holding the ornaments, which he actually had placed on his clothes so that he didn't have to hold it.
Yeah.
So he had it hanging, you know, on his zippers and, you know, on his shirt. And but as he was handing her one of the bulbs or the ornaments, it dropped and it fell and it hit the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And now, knowing Asperger's, they get scared. And those
small things can sort of freak them out. Yeah.
And Clint, it was very, very beautiful to watch because he backed up.
Right.
And, of course, Gertie, his love interest, she did not know what to do. So she kind of stood back, which the doctor, he's always told us as a film crew, if it gets in that situation, back up and let him figure it out.
Right,
because the problem is people try to figure it out.
Start showing him stuff.
Right.
Just pick it up.
Right.
Yeah.
And so we backed up. She backed up. And Clint assessed the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought he was walking towards it to the ornament to pick it up, to clean it up.
Right.
But instead, he actually started stepping on it. Grinding it into the ground, but in a rhythmic fashion.
Come on.
It was genius. No, it was beautiful. Because what he did is he heard the crash, and he said, this has a tonal quality.
Yeah, right.
And that was one of the things when we met up with the doctor that we really figured out that actually he created an album called I can't really say the album yet because it's not been released. But he created an album in the insane asylum. He had committed himself after the talk show incident.
Right.
And he created this album, but it was because he started hearing these repetitive noises.
Right.
And he heard tonal qualities in them. And that was one of the things that you constantly see with Clint.
Right.
Where he will hear something,
it'll trigger something.
And that was one of his big things in New York, because he was in New York for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's worked with a lot of avant-garde artists in New York.
Right.
By replicating sound, creating sound out of just everyday utensils every day.
Uh-huh.
It's rumored that shows like Stomp and those kind of things were in – either
someone knew about him or
had
influences.
And
people would admit to it. I mean, would know that
he's influenced more than just music. And that's what I think that, you know, fashion. We were talking about fashion earlier.
Yeah, right.
He started a fad with the short jean jackets, you know.
Yeah, that I wear.
Yeah, exactly, man. I walked in and I saw your jacket and I'm like,
yeah, the Clint Rippey jacket. I'm putting my Clint jacket, man, for the interview. Now, people should know that the interview. I guess the interview they did walk off on, it was a show. Is it a regional show or
it was a national show? It was a national show.
He was going to be interviewed. It was the first
international, and that was before we got.
This was kind of a turning point, right? I mean, in his people being more aware, because.
And that
was,
that was the instance that I remember. I mean, it's like Johnny Carson's last show. Everybody was watching it because Clint Rippey. Even if you slightly knew who Clint Rippey was, you had seen his picture, you had seen something about him.
Right.
And it was the international, it was the Bandy Whitman show, and he interviewed Clint and just pressed the wrong button. Now that
started.
And that was before we started this film. I actually started this film, I guess it was a few months after he had left the rehab.
Show. The rehab.
Yeah, and But he left the show just because...
much like he would leave a session. He wasn't interested and that was it. He just walked off.
But the interesting thing was that he had his mic on and he knocked over the table and it was just one of those, or the plant or whatever it was on the show. And
he had a clip-on mic. Now, is this in the movie?
Well,
film?
Is it addressed
in the film?
It's definitely addressed because it's a turning point, because everybody remembers when that happened.
Right.
I remember the next day I was doing a session, and we started the session like an hour late because we were talking about, you know, and one of the guys was like, "Man, he's such a jerk," and I'm like, "How do we know that? You know, how do we know that he's a jerk?" Maybe he just had the wrong button pushed, or maybe he had to go to the bathroom. I mean, but that's what society does. I remember when Monster, the movie Monster, came out about
Charlize Theron.
It was a very interesting behind the scenes interview with her, and she said, you know, people misunderstood her because of the way media captured her or talked about her, or not interpreted, but I can't even think of the word.
Yeah, the slant, the way she was portrayed.
Right,
in media.
Portrayed. Yeah. And she's like, she's actually, even though she killed all these people, she's really a sweet person. And she wasn't psycho. And there's a picture of her taken where she had her handcuffs. Is the famous picture of her with her handcuffs up around her neck, and it said, you know, psycho lady or whatever. But that wasn't the case. She was actually flipping her hair.
Oh, I see.
From her face, but that snapshot was taken. Same thing with Clint. When he walked off the show, they put a still frame of him, and he had this angry look on his face. You remember the tabloids, the picture?
Yeah.
When what did it say? Prudish, you know, performance artist walks off talk show.
Right.
Embarrassing moment in television history. You know, an hour long session for one artist, and he walks off 30 minutes into his interview.
Right.
What do you do? You know.
And so what does Clint? So you're still in the process of filming film. Are you following him around?
We're following him around.
Are y'all going to try to get down to the Ingram deal?
Yeah. Pete's already actually talked to us about that. And so we're. The thing with Clint is you show up hoping he shows up, and sometimes he never shows up. So
what's that April?
This
Friday, right?
It's this Friday, the 5th, I guess,
Is that? No, the 2nd or the 3rd.
Let me get my
smartphone. Gosh, I can't even. But that's this Friday.
This Friday.
So if you're listening to this podcast before then, this will be on, you know, it posts on Wednesday. Yeah, make it out to that Green Hall show.
Go support Jack.
You might. Yeah, buy that Jack Ingram ticket, man. You might get more than you possibly bargained for.
Friday the
2nd. Clint Rippey. I wonder if Coatney will just gladly relinquish the kit.
Oh, he always does.
Of course he will.
We've been out several times when he records with Jack or with different artists.
Yeah.
And a lot of times we'll...
I don't think he's ever played live with Jack, though, has he?
Maybe in the studio, he sat in.
I don't know if he's been at a show. That's still probably tough for him. Big crowd kind of deal like that.
The thing about Clint is like I said, the doctor's really trying to get him involved in society. And so I think he's taken that on, and he's just starting to show up. And when he shows up, you just let him go.
So a film like this would be tough. There's so much to tell, and it's an ongoing story. How do you wrap it up or tie it into some sort of releasable package? I mean, at what point do you say, all right, this is where we roll the credits?
I made a decision.
And put it out there.
I made a decision when I started this. I was not going to stop until I felt like Clint was comfortable with society, and I'm seeing him do a lot of changes.
So if the film brought some sort of notoriety to him,
not necessarily that.
He wouldn't be maybe way uncomfortable with it, or
no, not necessarily that. Just the fact that I think it's important to see that he, honestly, for me, it's a persistence thing.
Yeah.
I don't want him to think that I come in and capture some stuff and then leave. So we have a film crew that follows him around about 4 days a week. And so we have this wealth of archival footage.
Just him eating breakfast and stuff? I mean, just all
random
kinds
stuff.
Of, yeah.
And that's the thing. You know, he will leave the house, and we don't know where he's going.
Yeah, right.
And so he'll jump on his bike. We'll jump in the van, and we'll follow him at a safe distance. Mm-hmm. And he'll end up going to a gig, and he's playing with some famous artist. So
does he understand that y'all are filming him? And, I mean,
he does.
He's given some consent.
And
that
was something that the doctor
took a while to
That he had really brought to the table is that, you know, this is good for Clint. I want him to get into society. You guys aren't going to try to figure him out. You're going to represent
him. Showing him for what he is. Right?
Showing him for what he is, and he needs that. And
so what's next for Clint Rippey himself, you think?
Besides, you never know,
I mean,
man.
You think he's got another record like Symbolic?
You never know. I mean, we've
avant-garde thing.
Since
I mean,
we've been filming, yeah. He's already
recorded three
albums.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so,
yet to be released.
Yet to be released. Some of them he doesn't even release. A lot of them leaks out. Josh has had some problems with some interns and stuff in the past,
leaking stuff out. Yeah,
just
MP3s and things.
Right. And so, you know, Josh has a very, very strict, like when Clint's in, it's his musicians, Clint and Josh, and that's it.
Does he have a favorite set of musicians he plays with?
He does. He's got a group of guys that he trusts that have played with him.
What does this crack band kind of consist of? Is he a keyboard and bass?
It's keyboard, bass. I mean, always bass and drums, of course. He always has that one element.
Right, right.
The bass.
Just the rhythm, yeah.
The rhythm. Right, right. But sometimes, you know, he'll have – he's done a session the other day. He had three bass players.
Really?
Yeah. and you laugh, but you know the funk guys did it back in the day. You know,
sure, yeah.
The two drummers, the two bass players, the 16 keyboard players. Exactly.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
One guy's doing lead, one guy's doing rhythm. So he does that. He does some really really random stuff. He's starting to go to these drum circles and showing up. And like for instance, which when you said that whole thing about Will Ferrell and the cowbell, it didn't shock me because we followed him to this. A drum session or drum circle, and he didn't bring any drums, showed up, he walked over to the bar, took two beer bottles, one of them was full, and just emptied it in the little tray behind the counter, and he started using it as a clave. Right, and he broke like three in a row, and he kept going back there and getting another one. And the guys in the drum circle know who he is. You just let him do it.
They give him the room of broken glass, and he's just finding the groove. Yeah. Just finding the groove.
Finding the groove.
Wow, dude. They do not make many like Clint Rippey, my friends. Clint Rippey. Who is Clint Rippey? Go to travelingbandito.com, or you can search Clint Rippey on YouTube and watch the trailer. It is a work in progress, man. It just goes and goes and goes. Well, man, I hope we can. We are all just looking forward to the release of that, man. We'll all be enlightened by one of the great, any inside musician has had some sort of Clint Rippey story, it seems like. You know, at least the guys who do a lot of, a lot of basic tracking, more drummers and bass players maybe than your average singer-songwriter type guy maybe would know. But producers, engineers, those are the guys who always seem to know who he is and what he's done, and have heard at least one bootleg copy of Symbolic somewhere.
And because the film is still in progress, I can't really disclose this, but there are a lot of famous, well-known artists that I've interviewed and that have stories their own about Clint.
Right.
And
his influence.
And
what he's worked on.
Sure.
So. Well, it's going to shed a lot of light. Does the film have an official title?
Who
is Clint Rippey? Forthcoming. Could be released. Who knows? A couple months or a year. Who knows? Somewhere maybe in there. Maybe not.
Sure.
Much longer past then. Well, Chance Ryan Brentham has been here, filmmaker, musician, actor. Thanks for coming in today, man. It has been enlightening. We look forward to the Clint Rippey story coming out, the documentary. Man, what a fascinating subject. I hope that all the P2 fans out there seek that out. If you're down there near Green Hall this weekend, that's the first Friday in April, show up for that Jack Ingram gig down there. Say hi to Pete Coatney and keep your head on a swivel, man. Look for a guy in a small, poor-fitting clothes to possibly take the stage and,
should be
play like Green Hall has never heard in its entire ancient life. Well, thanks for being here, Chance. Phil Pritchett here. As always, email me, phil@philpritchett.com, or call me, 817-733-5256. Download all the Phil Pritchett records for just $4 a piece at p2tunes.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. We will see you next week on the podcast. Have a great week, and be good out there.